Hi, this is Paul Siegel. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan. And on this episode of Wandering DMs, we're going to be talking about changing editions. Now, Wizards of the Coast has announced a new version of D&D that will be coming out in, I guess, 2 years from now. And Paul and I thought that we would take the opportunity to talk about prior changes of editions in D&D and what are the issues and the pitfalls and the lessons that we might take for what WotC does next today on Wandering DMs.
Awesome. Now, Dan, you and I are talking about this. It's actually surprisingly old news because I guess this actually came out back in September. But we're talking about this because of a new book that's just coming out. I'm going to put that up on screen, The Monsters of the Multiverse, which I think there was some surprising information about this being, quote unquote, backwards compatible with 5th edition, which is feels like a weird way to put it when 5th edition is the current edition.
Yeah.
But
I have a lot of questions about that. Now, the cover, obviously, you know, to an old schooler like me, immediately gets my juices running because the background there is a pretty near copy of the art for the first edition, Manual of the Planes, that was written by Jeff Grubb and a lot of us really, really love. That's pretty, like, at first sight, I thought it was an actual photocopy. But I guess that's a new piece of art in pretty much the same pose. I think later on they called that the Astral Dreadnought. But that covers like 60% the first edition Manual of Planes, which is kind of interesting. So they're reaching out for both, you know, experienced gamers as well as new gamers. And I understand that from a business perspective. That's very smart.
I mean, much like our own channel, Dan, I feel like Wizards tries really hard to bridge the gap between the variety of different fans of D&D, which I think is a smart move. But anyway,
and that is the challenge of changing editions, right? How much do you keep and how much do you change? And that, so right in that very cover, you kind of have a synopsis of the challenge when you're changing editions.
Yep. So, the interesting thing is, in some of the articles that we saw float around about this book and about that claim that it's backwards compatible, there was links to an earlier statement, I'll just put it up on screen, by Ray Wininger, the executive producer of Wizards of the Coast, who back in September said on camera during some kind of live stream, I know there's been a lot of speculation, but I can actually reveal today that we have earlier this year began work on the next evolution of Dungeons & Dragons. New versions of the core rule books that will be coming out in 2024 to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Dungeons & Dragons. Probably not a surprise to most D&D fans that a new version is coming out. I note he doesn't use the word edition here. And I thought really quickly, Dan, I would just pose this weird question of like, well, what is an edition of D&D and what is not?
Yeah, you know, the more, that's an issue. Like I was thinking about that this morning, and the more you think about it, the more complicated it becomes. It's kind of like being, I don't know, like a biologist or something like that and being like, yeah, I'm dealing with 5 species. Well, maybe 5.5. Well, I guess there's like subspecies. Oh no. Now I have a huge, a huge prickly issue that. So, obviously, the currently published edition of D&D, most of us call it 5th edition. Mm-hmm. But there's been way more than just 5 products of D&D over its evolution. And I forget who put this together, but maybe a year or two ago, a couple of years back, someone put together a timeline of all the different branching versions up until the start of 5th there.
That was Nick Wedig, or Wedig, I'm
there
sorry,
you go, Nick for, Wedig.
Forgive me, Nick, for mispronouncing your last name. And this is actually a version that I modified to jam 5th edition into the end there, because it was missing that chart. It's an interesting chart that I think you and I have shown a few times before of sort of the different editions and how they branched and merged and whatnot. I think we were saying before the show that, like, in fact, they didn't even use the word edition until AD&D 2nd edition. That was branded as 2nd edition.
Right.
But of course, plenty of other books came before and in parallel. Like, let's not forget that basic Dungeons & Dragons was a separate product that was run in parallel with advanced Dungeons & Dragons. So your Holmes
through the 80s, basically.
Moldvay and Mensur and Rule Cyclopedia all existed. And are those editions? I don't know. Frankly, I was confused as a kid. I'll tell you, I had the Moldvay basic set and the first edition Advanced Dungeons & Dragons Player's Handbook, and I thought those were both part of the same game. I did not realize that those were two different things. So, yeah.
And if you look at, I mean, and in your good company, obviously, Paul, many people either consciously or unconsciously mashed them all together. Many people did that. It's some people aware of what they were doing and some people weren't. The additional complication. So we're kind of in that picture there. We're kind of talking about that lower branch that's labeled basic D&D there. While what was called advanced D&D went through first, second editions in the 80s and 90s, you had this basic edition that was supposed to be simpler. And the interesting thing is the first copy of that, the blue book there of Holmes Basic, very specifically directs the reader to advanced D&D, the upper branch, if they want to go past the first three levels.
Yeah, so it's more of an introduction.
After that,
Demon its
And then
right.
there's debate about did Holmes himself actually put those directions in? No, he didn't. Actually, Gary Gygax took his draft and added these directions after the fact in order to promote his AD&D magnum opus. And so in many places, there's kind of a bit of a fault line there about things not exactly syncing up because of these competing concerns about what does the buyer get next.
Just for, I know a lot of our regular viewers sort of, I'm sure already know this, but for the sake of any new viewers, one interesting factor is you mentioned there was some debate on a forum about like sort of the biggest misconception about the original version of Dungeons and Dragons. Let's not forget the new edition's coming out at the 50-year anniversary in 2024. 50 years ago would have been 1974 when original Dungeons and Dragons came out, which I think a lot of people or the general public probably doesn't even know exists, right? Because that's kind of off-white box all the way on the left there. Came out in 74 that we now affectionately call Zero Edition or Original Edition because it came before First Edition.
Exactly. Crazy. Exactly. Yep. I will also point out that Wizards is coincidentally their 50th anniversary is also, according to the Chinese calendar, is the next year of the dragon. So that's... That's kind of nice.
You think that's a happy accident or a very intentional, clever marketing ploy?
That's a happy accident. That's a very happy accident. If I was marketing, I'd be very happy about that, honestly.
Yeah, for sure. So our goal here is not to ignite any edition wars. We just want to talk about sort of how the publishers have promoted switching between editions and how you and I have personally gone through edition changes to our existing games. Some may argue, is it too early, too late, too soon, to whatever, been coming for a new edition? Just real quick, I did put together a quick chart of sort of the lifespan of the different, of the major editions, as it were. And it's interesting to note that they're increasingly longer lived, that fifth edition by 2024 will have been out for 10 years. And if you lump third and 3.5 together, that's roughly 8 years. So you could say like 8 to 12 years is probably about the lifespan of an edition of D&D, with fourth being notably.
It's interesting with the because there was a pretty big difference between third edition and 3.5 D&D there. And the third edition books were only out for, according to your chart, 3 years before Wizards came out with the next edition. I believe... You were at the Gen Con event where that was announced. Am I remembering that right,
fourth
Paul?
Edition. I was at Gen Con when fourth edition was announced. I remember going to that event and hearing them promote it. I feel like 3.5 was a little more subtle. They were just sort of like, put it out there. And we're just like, just like, I don't remember specific rules or encouragement of how to move from 3 to 3.5. I would almost argue that they probably called it 3.5 to ease that, to just sort of be like, well, it's just, you know, just refinement. This isn't a major shift. Just an update.
Now, if I recall correctly, the a webcomic that we enjoy a lot, Order of the Stick, I think that they started right at that moment. So I think I pulled up. Here is the very first number one Order of the Stick, which is now 18 years ago, 19 years ago. Oh, my goodness. And the very first joke is about all the little, right? I believe my opinion is that 3.5 had lots of tiny changes, lots and lots of tiny changes. And so here you've got your dwarf becoming more stable, and you've got your bard getting new armor, and you've got people getting new skills, and then, of course, your halfling ranger incredibly angry by the end of it that his weapons got smaller. And you can see right in the middle there, Varsuvius the wizard, right, this on the third row down, is explicitly breaking the fourth wall and saying, "I understand. I believe we are being converted to the new 3.5 edition." And most everybody's happy, and some of your characters are not.
let's go back then. Let's walk through the editions and sort of talk about how edition change has been managed. You know, here's our zero edition. Here's our original edition. I there's probably not a lot to talk about going from zero to first, right? I don't think much to do was made about it, right? It was just use it, right? Just
go. I'm gonna politely disagree. I think that so among the interesting events when you converted from here to first edition, Andy, that was the first time anybody ever made a hardcover gaming book for starters in the role playing industry. So that was an adventure all on its own, and I'm sure at some point we can talk to Tim Kask, who was involved with that, about that. So it was a risk making large, fairly expensive hardcover books, whether that was going to be an issue. During the development, you can see articles by Gygax during the development where the name Advanced D&D came up fairly late. He was saying, "We're going to be making Dungeons and Dragons hardcover books." And part of the goal there was to standardize play and allow more people to move between DMs on and have a reliable basis that they know what the game's going to look like. And the interesting thing about first edition is that partly because of the risk of making these hardcover books, they didn't all come out at once. They took 3 years before the core rule books, the player's book, the DM's book, and the monster's manual book were all available. The monster manual came out first.
I was just going to say, like, the most interesting part of that, right, is that the monster manual came out first, right? So here you have books that are just full of stats of monsters that ostensibly work with a new unpublished edition, right? But you can still use it currently with your current edition. Gosh, that sounds a lot like another book that I heard about recently.
That's exactly it, right? So Monster Book comes out first, and for first edition, that was 1977. The Player's Book didn't come out until 1978, and the DM's Book didn't come out until 1979. And yes, Paul, the first book, the Monster Manual, many people point to that and say the AD&D Monster Manual is really more compatible with original D&D. It's basically a compilation of all the scattered monsters that they had around a whole bunch of different supplements and a whole bunch of different pages at that point. And as the release cycle continued into 1978, 1979, more modifications were made such that the Monster Manual is a little bit out of sync with the later books. Here's a couple of examples. They changed the AC base. As of the Monster Manual, the basic AC is 9. In the Player's Handbook, it became 10. The alignments changed. In the original Monster Manual, there's only 5 alignments. The alignments of neutral good, neutral evil, lawful neutral, chaotic neutral do not exist yet, right? Yeah. They weren't created until the Player's Handbook a year later.
Dan, before we get too deep in the weeds here, I want to bring us back to the topic at hand of the edition change. So what I'm curious about, though, is I don't remember, or haven't seen a lot of text. Maybe there was some articles in Dragon Magazine or whatnot about, like, hey, there's a new edition coming out. Here's how you're going to adapt. And that really the focus here is about growing the audience, right? Like, let's make a thing that's more accessible to more people who've never heard of the game, rather than, you know, ease or basically battle the Osborne effect, right? Like, are they trying? Do you think that they released the Monster Manual 2 years in advance of the final Dungeon Master's Guide just to ease the Osborne effect, or they just needed 2 years to work?
Well, what is the let's explain what the Osborne effect is, because you and I were talking about that, and I think this is a really interesting case in the business world. You can look up on Wikipedia what is the Osborne effect. In 1981, there was a computer company called Osborne Computer Corporation, and many people were making personal computers at the time. Hundreds of companies were you know competing in that space, and they made a Osborne computer number one. And the CEO came out and said, just to be clear, this is basically a prototype. We are already working on the next version, and version two is going to be so much better than this, it's going to blow your mind. And as a result, nobody bought version one. The company went out and went bankrupt, and they never made version two. Great. So there is this known risk of promoting the next version product too soon that has actually forced companies bankrupt. So for some of us, there's a question. WotC announced this new version of D&D 3 years in advance. I'm not going to claim they're going to go bankrupt. They're not going to do that. But is that too early?
Interesting.
That's a long lead time. And my point with the first edition stuff is, even though they tried to keep it compatible with the prior version over a 3 year span, that was not feasible. They failed at that. And the design drifted in 3 years. Despite their original goals,
my instinct, and I don't have anything that I can quote here to back this up, but my instinct though is that was not like they were not intending a 2 year gap between those books. That they just needed that amount of time to produce the book, right? That it wasn't like a marketing plan of like no, you want to wait a couple years before you release a thing. Whereas clearly,
I think that's right.
You know, clearly Wizards, I think at this point, if they wanted to, could sit on the news about the new edition. They could really sit on it for another year or two and they'd be fine, I would think.
Do you think Whittaker did that intentionally? Like, since that was, it wasn't like a released press release, like, do you think that was an accident by Whittaker or was that an intentional?
I think that was highly intentional. Yeah. I think that was highly intentional. And I think the reason you see them doing this is just that, you know, historically we know that there have been some backlash about new editions and, you know, and that rather than sort of you get the opposite or something very different from the Osborne effect, where you get existing players who say, I don't want the new thing. You're ruining my fun. I'm going to stick with what I got. And now you're losing sales that way. Right. So I feel like a little bit, they want to ease the audience into it and say like, don't worry, everything's going to be fine. Your game's going to get better. You can still use all your old stuff. Everything's great. Which frankly reminds me a lot of the transition from first to second. So I dug up one of my favorite ridiculous pieces of history here, which is the second edition preview booklet. This was released, I don't remember when, prior to second edition being released. This was a 30-page booklet, a free booklet that you could pick up at the game store that just was promoting second edition. Second edition is coming. It's awesome. Here's why you should buy it. And it's about 28 pages of promotion, followed by a 2-page section here about shifting gears. How do I convert? What do I do? Like, what's going on to my campaign? Which I think is really fascinating. Before I dig into that, though, I just want to read you this wonderful bit of copy in the introduction of this booklet, which says, comparing the Advanced Dungeons & Dragons second edition of game to the first edition, now over 15 years old, is like comparing a Porsche 959 to a Model T Ford. Both are great cars for their times, but which would you want to drive in the 1990s? That's a heck of a claim.
You know, it's really funny how you have to walk this line of, and there's, I guess there's embarrassing videos like at the start of the fourth edition era of them really going overboard on slagging the product that's currently on the shelves that has a big fan base. You know, in the comics world, there's this phrase jumping on points of like you restart a volume of a comic and you say, this is a great jumping on point for new readers. But every jumping on point is also a jumping off point. That is a real hard thing to navigate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Model T.
Model T. Yeah. 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 It's crazy. And frankly, when I compare different editions of D&D, I would say first and second edition are about as close as two editions can get. That subsequent edition changes were much more radical.
For new viewers, the early editions, and I would include zero to first to second, the changes were very conservative compared to the modern era. It was really the third edition. And we've talked to Peter Adkison on the show. We've talked to Sean K. Reynolds, and they really had a goal of, we can just change whatever we want and make it significantly different. And that was really new as of third. Zero for a second, you could mishmash them to a large degree and not even know that you were using a different edition set to largely. Good point.
So I find, I'm not going to dig through all of these, but I just want to read kind of the questions. Like, they set this up kind of fact-like, and the questions that they thought were going to be important to their audience is very interesting to me, because it's a lot about continuity, like almost like they're thinking about this like a television show, right? Because they're asking, what is second edition going to do to my campaign? What about assassins? You got rid of assassins. What am I supposed to do with my assassins guild? Oh no, assassins are gone. What about my old rule books? Do I have to throw them out? That is a very, poignant marketing point. And their answer to that is, no, of course not. Keep using your old books, and a lot of stuff is compatible and is fine, and don't worry about it. And then on their second page of this, we have, compatibility of modules and accessories, and I'm just starting to play the game. Should I, how do I learn? And I really like this last question. Suppose I get the second edition player's handbook. What do I do until the Dungeon Master's Guide comes out 2 months later? How can I wait 2 whole months, Dan?
2 months? Oh my goodness. How will you get through?
Yeah. Yeah. So I find that booklet really fascinating. It's a big thing, right? Yeah. It's 32 pages of promotion about basically trying to ease the minds of our first edition players that second edition is coming out. I guess the other thing I'll point out from the era that immediately clicks into my head is, I remember that they tried really hard to explain the shift in mechanics in the fiction, and they had this whole event called the Cataclysm.
Right.
Right. And I remember at the time I was reading the Forgotten Realms comic book, and it happens right there in the fiction. You have this whole section where we have the magic user character in that comic book, and he's saying, Phantasmal Force is a beginner spell now. Cloudburst has evaporated. Look, Magic Missile is less effective than it was. They were definitely very worried about, oh my gosh, Magic Missile is not quite as effective as it used to be. It does a little
very similar to the Order of the Stick from the third edition switch. Now, the cat, I'm so glad you brought that up. I'm not super familiar with Forgotten Realms background, so I wouldn't have known that. Yeah. The Cataclysm that Paul was talking about was specific to the Forgotten Realms campaign setting. Right. Sean Reynolds was working on that. And I think if you look at the interview we had with him the other year, we talked about that with Sean Reynolds, actually, about being careful about that. So for different campaign worlds, they dealt with that differently. For the Greyhawk campaign world, there was a mega module called Fate of Istus. And I think I had the cover of their the cover of Fate of Istus. So Fate of Istus was like what Paul was saying for Cataclysm. For the Forgotten Realms, it is I guess the term is diegetic. The changes are actually observable to the characters in the fictional world. The goddess Istus reevaluates what the world of Greyhawk is like and waves her hand and makes a bunch of changes. There's 10 linked adventures in there, one for each character class at the time. And of course, among the major changes from first to second edition is, there was a bit of a moral panic at the time. So some things were taken out of the core rule book, such as there used to be a dedicated assassin class. Okay, remove that. I guess it was kind of distasteful. Demons and devils were the evil extraplanar races were removed from the books. And also monks were removed from the core books because they were considered to be a different culture and therefore not appropriate for core D&D. So Fate of Istus walks through these changes and has a number of adventures where people are grappling with that. Interestingly, a couple of years later, Sean Reynolds had an adventure called The Scarlet Brotherhood where he retconned that, where he brought monks back into the setting because they're so cool and we love monks.
What, out of curiosity, I don't know this module well, Dan, or really at all. What did they do with Assassins?
I mean, they're gone by the end of it. I'd have to look up in more detail. Maybe one of our viewers knows exactly what it looked like when Assassins went away.
What I found very interesting is the facts section there from the second edition preview asks, what do I do about Assassins? You got rid of Assassins. And their response is, oh, it's simple. The guild just opens its membership up to everyone. Like, you don't have to have a special class to be an assassin. Mm-hmm. You know, wouldn't
you want to be an assassin? Kill somebody, am I right?
Marvelous Pete Hiller.
Right.
But they didn't want it
on the books at the time. They didn't want it on the books as a selectable character class for moral concerns. So at the time, will that return? I don't know.
Did you have a first edition campaign that had to convert to second?
No, for me, that was a jumping off point. And I know many people, right, like you, I think, Paul, you started your AD&D play with second edition, and it brought many people into the hobby. For me, it was a jumping off point. For me, when they announced second edition, I was like, great, I won't have to buy any more D&D books. This is a great sign for me. And I did not engage with second edition until you pulled me back in, Paul.
Years later, you pulled
me back into a second edition campaign.
Yeah, fascinatingly, I would say, like I said, as a young kid, I certainly had the first edition AD&D books, which I commingled with Basic and had no idea that there was a difference. And then at some point started playing second, and I just didn't even think about it. And frankly, probably I was playing with different people, so probably the campaign changed. I don't think we ever converted or worried about it. I just picked up the second edition books. And I was like, great, there's new books. Okay, I'll have the new books, because new is better, right? My opinion is that most people's reaction to this very, very careful, like, how do I adapt my world? How do I adapt my campaign? Is probably overdoing it, right? Like, probably didn't really need this much handholding to.
Well, in retrospect, maybe that's a mistake. See, that's one of my main questions is, should the rules changes be diegetic inside the campaign worlds? At the time, you know, we see it in the comic, we see it in adventure, we see publications like that. Our viewer John Miller in the chat right now is reminding us that R.A. Salvatore was told by Jeff Grubb in his novels to kill off the character Artemis Intrary because they were an assassin and they don't exist anymore in the Forgotten Realms. And I think Sean was telling us that, like, a generation later, the idea is just let's not engage with this. This is too much trouble, and let's make those changes not be visible inside the campaign world and just retcon it, I think is what he said.
Did we talk to Ari Salvatore? Did we talk to him about Artemis Untrary? I feel like we should get that.
I think William in the chat is saying that we did briefly touch on it, actually.
Great. I think maybe I should go back and rewatch my own stuff.
I'm being told that Bob's recollection is that he just changed the character to be a multi-class fighter rogue.
Right, sure. Who still kills people. Great.
For money.
Let's get second edition. This is where our personal history starts to get into it. I remember, Dan, when we first met and talked about starting a D&D campaign with a couple other folks, this was a conversation we had of, should we play first or should we play second? And I think you are probably the only one arguing for first, and the rest of us are all like, what? You crazy old man.
Let's play second.
That seems
in character, yeah.
Yeah, but we were in the midst of playing. That was 99. We started that campaign in late 99, and by 2000, was it 2000 when third edition comes out?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, so third edition comes out while we're in the midst of playing that campaign, and so we converted, right? And in fact, as I recall, there was a special conversion manual for us of how do you convert your characters and et cetera, how do you translate everybody over? What's your memory of that? How well did that work?
I didn't find any fault with it. It seemed reasonable to me. at the time. It went into pretty good detail about what classes convert, how do levels work, ability scores. Obviously, third edition had a much more extensive skills system. So there were there was advice about how to convert your second edition style proficiencies, is what they were called, into skills. And I thought it worked fine, but they didn't do it after that, right, Paul?
They didn't do a conversion guide? Is that what you're saying?
After I don't think later edition switches.
I never saw another conversion guide after this one. I will say, I remember back then being kind of excited about the new edition. This is basically right after Wizards acquires TSR. Like the whole product line has felt kind of like fallow for a little while, and what's going to happen to it, and like, oh, they made a new edition, this is exciting. I feel like that was the feeling at our table, was this is exciting, we're excited to embrace the new edition and check it out. For me though, the conversion didn't go so great. If you remember, I was playing a character built using the second edition Tome of Magic. I was playing an elemental wizard in the element of earth, and that just didn't exist in third edition yet. that concept did not exist. And I think I ended up converting him to a sorcerer, was like the closest thing I could get to making this character work in third edition. And eventually I just kind of felt like it wasn't quite right. I wasn't terribly happy about him, and I just got rid of him and made a new character.
Yeah. I think you probably actually had the roughest time, the poorest fit with the conversion. And I mean, maybe that's a common experience if someone's using like a supplement or an accessory class or source. And sure. I think that the key word you slipped in there was it wasn't available yet. They might recreate these things in supplements later on, but they're not going to be in the core rule books, and you're going to be left out to dry if you want to play that same thing. Like a lot of people like Wild Magic from second edition, same kind of thing. It won't be there in the core rule books. Probably Psionics won't be there. So that might be a common problem for people that are eager to explore supplementary stuff. They might not be there in the new core.
Yeah. Again, I don't think it was something I really tore my hair out at the time. I was excited about the new rules and new stuff to interact with. And so I was like, great, let me make a new character using the new rules so I can build from the ground up and make something that's fun. And I think that's something I would come back to, and I would look at, I would bring us back to this chart here, right? Again, glossing over the 3 and 3.5 short lifespan and the original short lifespan, but that's a whole separate ball of wax. Again, if you imagine 3 and 3.5 are essentially the same edition, all of these editions live for roughly 10 years, plus or minus. Mm-hmm. And 10 years is a long time to run a campaign, to be honest, at least for me. I know there are certainly some long run campaigns out there, but for me, like by the time a new edition comes out, I'm probably jonesing for something new anyway. And so like me using it as a point to create new is maybe more common, I will argue.
I'm going to wonder out loud here if the lifespan of campaigns hasn't been decreasing over time. The original first edition books, there just wasn't any discussion about campaigns ending. The promise at the time was that a D&D campaign was just endless. That was the goal. Now you could write that. It's more easy to write that when the game only exists for 2 or 3 years. Okay. Yeah. Your campaign hasn't ended yet. And there are some people from that era that are still playing campaigns 20, 30, 40 years old. So maybe that was more, those switches were more of concern to keep it compatible when the campaigns were longer running. And maybe now that campaigns are shorter, we just assume that you can just reboot the whole thing. Maybe those two things are working in sync with each other. I don't know.
I mean, this is probably a whole separate topic for us, Dan, because now that I think about it, right, in the old school, you had modules, right? And some of them were obvious continuations of each other, right? The A series, the G series, these all, like, they were clearly, you know, sequels to each other. But in a lot of cases, it was kind of up to the DM to figure out how to stitch these things together into a cohesive whole. And that's not the way content is published these days, at least not by Wizards, right? Wizards is now producing big campaign books where they're like, here is a whole campaign that's going to take your characters from first level to 20th or whatever. And they're just trying to give you the entirety of the content. So I wonder, what I don't know off the top of my head is, how long do they expect that to last? If I play some of the pre-written material from Wizards, I play a boxed campaign from them, how many years of play do they think that is?
That's a good question.
Yeah, that's something I would like to dig into. So
don't they think you can go to like level 1 to 20 in a single year now? Isn't the idea that you can go from level 1 to 20 in like 1 year of play? Isn't that the offer now?
I don't know.
I might be misremembering.
Again, I'm, it's interesting I haven't really played any of that content, so...
You know, it's interesting with the adventures, because it was on my mind with the ODD discussion the other day. Is someone simultaneously made the point of, you know, what some people critique, what current players critique the original D&D for, is they say that there's not enough there. It takes too much work on the part of the DM to construct a full game, fill in all the gaps and make a campaign world. And they said, but I don't see it that way at all. What I see it as is a skeletal superstructure for making a unique campaign world for each DM. And my response was, that's sort of the same thing. Isn't that exactly the same thing? Just whether you take it as a positive or negative.
Yeah.
And at the time, the original creators of the game couldn't believe that adventure modules could be sold, right? They went a number of years really resisting the idea of prepackaged adventures, saying, of course you don't want that. The whole point of the hobby is to create your own unique adventures. And the creators of D&D were not the first people to publish modules. They were late to the game. And now it's very different, obviously.
Let's jump forward. Let's talk about 3.5.
Yeah.
Great. So I'm just going to show this chart again. 3.5. If you consider 3.5 a major edition change, I did at the time. That makes third edition just about the shortest lived edition that exists, apart from original, maybe around the same time. 3.5 was my jumping off point, Dan. That was where I was done. Done with the new editions.
Yes.
No thanks. I'm done with this. I don't think that's super common. I don't hear a lot of people saying that. Because also I do think that it was kind of slid under the radar a little. Not under the radar. Obviously they talked about, hey, there's a new edition and you should get it. But they certainly didn't make conversion guides, right? They were just like, just take the new rules and use them, right? This is 3.5, it's incremental changes, just use them. Don't worry about it.
Right. Yeah. The promise was that it was compatible but different. I think I struggled for a while trying to keep tabs on all the many changes, like to the spell listing. They made a great number of changes to the spells that were kind of hard to keep intact. And of course, they were wrestling with polymorph, right? Of course, that's a whole episode on its own.
Yeah. But I certainly, you know, these days, if I talk to anybody who still plays these editions, which there certainly are some, what I see is a lot of difficulty, frankly. A lot of people will scratch their heads and be like, wait, was that third or 3.5? Mm-hmm. Which rule did this go in? I don't have the 3.5 cover on hand, but
I didn't put that. That's on me. To the 3.0
cover. So they're very similar, right? Again, I think that the approach was just, this is just an incremental change, just deal with it, which is very different from fourth edition. Along comes fourth edition, where
now,
that's
fourth
the
edition
one where I
was
they made it. There was a big presentation about it at Gen Con. There was a lot of build up to it. It was the ads for that presentation were printed on the key cards to your hotel room. That's how big of a deal they were thinking it was.
Wow.
And and I don't know. Certainly,
how was that
the news at my table that was not received with excitement. We were like, ah, geez, really? So, yeah.
So a lot of people like fourth edition. So I remember among the things you can say many things about fourth edition is, and I remember them and Stephen in the chat is remembering the same thing that I did. Is they in contrast to the second to third conversion guide that Paul showed us. Wizards came out, and there somewhere there is a press release where they go on record and saying you cannot convert characters from third to fourth. It's impossible. We're not going to try it. There'll be no conversion guide. You just have to remake all your characters from scratch with the new rules.
Which is not surprising, frankly, because I do think, and I think many people agree with me on this, whether you like fourth edition or not, that fourth edition is the most different from any of the other editions. It is definitely an outlier. Right. You know, I remember the video says the game remains the same. But really, they were talking about like the core elements of the game are still the same. But certainly they weren't saying like, you're just going to adapt your current campaign setting. I think they were saying, nope, new campaign time. Definitely time for a new campaign.
Yeah. Ultimately, I don't think those claims were true. I mean, they have to say it for marketing purposes. And ultimately, I just don't think those statements were true. And at the same time, I mean, now we're getting into the whole fourth edition issue.
Yeah,
let's just say it was a jumping off point for many people. It was a clear jumping off point for many people. That was the moment when the OSR started up, basically, was people moving away from published D&D. That's basically spawned a lot of old-timers getting back to their DIY roots. Yep. The OSR started up there. And a couple of years later, amazingly, Pathfinder was, you know, based on third edition, was outselling the Dungeons and Dragons product. And we normally think of D&D as the 800-pound gorilla in the room of RPGs. And there was a particular window where it was the number two because more people were playing the third edition-inspired Pathfinder game. So, yes, very different. I think we can agree with
that. Yeah, Pathfinders are, you have a totally different company kind of picking up the flag and carrying it forward and saying, like, no, we're gonna be... know 3.75 or whatever you want to call it, where we are you know, following forward with that. I would say fourth edition was divisive, right? Some people love it, some people hate it, but definitely the community of D&D players was fractured at that point.
I agree.
And it's interesting because that's the one case where Wizards said, nope, this is brand new, toss your old stuff, right? And I would say, looking forward, looking at how they presented the following editions, they clearly learned their lesson from that. I think they clearly said, well, that's not the way to do it. Right? So then you have fifth edition come along, or what they called at the time, D&D Next. Anybody still calling it D&D Next?
They are not. We all call it fifth now. But yeah, they tried really hard for a while to not put a number on it. And there were, again, the run-up to it, there were claims of...
Anyone playing 5th, go grab your 5th edition books and take a look at them and find the number 5 on it somewhere. Probably will.
And same for, you know, here's my 3rd edition book, right? Is there a 3 on this, on the cover? Well, actually, there is. It's actually it's really small. There's one right here. If you look really, really carefully, there's a little bit, but it's not on the title page. It's not in the title of the book. So it seems like, repeatedly, they keep trying to get away from the numbers. That's not good for marketing, but I remember the run-up to what we call fifth now, right? They were calling it D&D Next, and a lot of the buzz was, we want people of any edition to be welcome. We want this to be compatible. We don't care what edition people are playing, whether it's first or second or fourth. We want everybody to be able to interface with this. And that was a large part of the run-up then too.
Yep. And also, I would say, like, news of this spread very quickly, right? This news of the new edition preceded the actual print by years, I think. I'm trying to remember the exact dates, and I'm failing. I'm sorry. I should have done more research on this angle of it. But I remember that it was in playtest for a super long time. Somewhere around here, I'm kicking around an early playtest edition book that is not fifth, not what was published. But they got a lot of buy-in, and they worked really hard to ease the audience into playing it. Now, are there conversion guides for how to adapt your fourth edition characters to fifth?
I highly doubt it. I don't know, but I would put down $20. That's impossible.
I've not seen it. If there is, I think, again, In this case, they were like, it's just not come forth with such an outlier. It's just not, let's not talk about it. I wouldn't be surprised if there did exist a Pathfinder or third edition to fifth edition conversion guide. That seems more plausible to me. But certainly wasn't.
I can imagine that. Right.
Yeah.
It's interesting that, again, the second to third jump was the last moment where they claimed that that was viable.
Now we're going to get into speculation land, Dan, because now we're going to talk about the next coming up. What? I don't want to use the word
next.
Tried that. The next. D&D plus. Okay. So.
D&D sharp.
What do you think? What do you think? Will the next version be called 5.5? Will it be called 6? Will there be a conversion guide from 5th?
I am really curious about that. I feel like, I don't think I have enough evidence one way or the other to make a claim. Clearly, Ray Winogur is being really cagey about that. And, you know, part of his statement was that we're taking a lot of lessons from 5th. And, you know, what we're doing is we're taking feedback from our 5th edition players to make revised books. So I feel like it could go either way. Like, I think that, if anything, your chart about editions tend to last 10 years, we're about at, you know, 2024 will be, the 10-year point for that. Yep. So I think based on prior evidence, it's quite likely it's going to be 6.
Yeah, I won't be surprised if the end result is that Wizards doesn't call it 6 and that the fans do.
Yes.
And then eventually they just embrace it and say, yeah, 6 is fine.
There you go. And that's what happened. That's what happened for 5th.
Yeah. Yeah. I will also posit, I will be surprised if there's a conversion guide, because I think they will just claim, no, it's so compatible, you don't have to worry about that. Right. They might talk about, here's how to convert your monsters, here's how to convert your character, maybe, but they're not going to talk about world changes or how to explain rule shift within the fiction. You're not going to see any of that. I think it's just going to be, just start using the new rules. It'll be fine. Which is probably, frankly, in my opinion, is probably the right way to go, I think. Like, that's certainly how things went from, say, I don't know, 0 to 1st? Right? 0 to 1st,
yeah,
surely. They weren't, like, hand-holding you of how to convert your stuff. They're like, here's some new rules. You should use them.
Yeah. Those early editions were more the same, right, than we've seen from 2nd to 3rd to 4th to 5th. Right, the changes have been more radical. Just on that point, maybe you can bring up my Mentzer quote, right? So I think last year, Mr. Frank Mentzer, who was involved in all that kind of stuff, had this quote on chatting on Facebook here, and this happens to be a discussion about what's the rules for how light gets used. And I just highlighted the interesting part. He said, and he's talking about the 0 to 1st switch. Presumed axiom for him and Gary Gygax was that the first edition rule set should expand upon and not directly contradict anything that happened in the 0 edition rules. And therefore, that's why we're going to come up with this ruling for the light spell, because somebody used it like this before and we can't take it away. So I think that it was easier. I mean, I've seen, Gygax in his later years write using the title O/AD&D, saying original/advanced D&D, that in his mind it was one single continuous game. And he himself didn't distinguish between the rules from what we identify as one of those sets and the other. It wasn't even initially meant to be called Advanced D&D with a different name. And I know that some of our good viewers and patrons will politely disagree with me on that. But if you talk to Gary, you talk to Frank, you talk to other people in that original circle, they do not distinguish between original and first edition as being different games. So I think that was they're compiling with the Monster Manual. They are compiling sources and just copy pasting from original D&D sources. They're just compiling it in one place. Mm-hmm. So that's easier than the larger switches that they're willing to make nowadays.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think if I had to compare it to other edition shifts, it's probably going to be more like the shift from 3 to 3.5 than anything else, where if you look closely, yes, there are a lot of differences, but they're not going to blow the trumpets and say, here's how you convert, here's how you reset your campaign, etc. I wouldn't be surprised if there's an online FAQ or other document about like, hey, I'm moving from the old edition to the new edition. How do I, you know, how do I fix XYZ? I don't think that it'll be, it certainly won't be printed and distributed to game stores like the second edition preview was. That's not going to happen.
Right.
But yeah, I bet it'll. I'm trying to remember now, actually, the conversion guide for second to third. How did we have that, Dan? Where did we must have. We must have gotten print copies of that from our local game store, right?
Archived PDF version. So I think that, you know, like when we were talking to Sean Reynolds, among the big switches they were making that time is pre-third edition being very internet hostile, frankly, and then becoming very internet friendly overnight when Peter Adkisson bought the company.
Remembering, in fact, that the third edition books had a CD and a sleeve in the back for their characterization software, which didn't. Yeah, I don't think we really tried. We tried as software people. Oh, we wanted that to work very much.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
No, it didn't.
Yeah. The promise was great. It took Wizards, I don't know, 30 years before they really got their software tools close to right.
Yeah.
Should we talk? In our last 10 minutes, should we talk briefly about we know what some of the changes that they want to make with this new Monsters of the Multiverse book is? What are some of the major changes that they do expect to be making in the near future?
I mean, the thing that jumps out to me the most about this book in particular is that it consolidates all of the new classes. They're like, hey, we've released a bunch of new classes. Let's put them all in one book. And there are 30 or over 30 classes? That's a lot of classes. Do you think the new player's handbook is going to have 30 classes in it? Wow. I suspect not. I suspect not. That's too many.
That just seems too many.
That's going to be... I feel bad for the poor new player who has to open up. I got my player's handbook. I'm learning D&D for the first time ever. Pick one of these 30 classes. Oh boy, that's too much choice. That's overwhelming.
I agree. I think that's the sign of like near the end of an edition, they do these compilations of like here's the everything for the decision is what it sounds like to me.
It's the clip show of RPG publishing.
It's the clip show. You know, there's actually products in the late 90s that I'm actually pretty fond of. They really did a lot of work with them. The Wizard Spell Compendium and the Cleric Spell Compendium. There's also like a Magic Item Compendium. And they come in like 4 volumes set for a total of like 1,500 pages each, I think. And the interesting thing there is that they claim to be compatible with all prior editions up until that point. They didn't even have an edition label on that. And the promise was that you could use these spells for 0th or 1st or 2nd edition because it was all the same game after all.
All the same. Yep.
I don't think you do that.
Excellent point here by Steven in the chat about that so that you can play one of those 5e classes in the new edition. In fact, I bet you that's exactly the backwards compatibility angle, right? I don't have to worry about the fact that Assassin doesn't exist in the new edition. This old book that collected all the old classes is compatible. So just use that.
Clever.
Yeah, I bet you that's it.
That's a good point.
What else? What did you want to talk about? Smart. Dan? What major difference jumps out at you that we know about the new
thing? Let me see. So I think the claim with the new book is that they'd spent a surprising amount of ink on challenge ratings in the new marketing material for the new book. And we should do a whole episode just once on challenge ratings, Paul, and whether that's actually a useful tool or not.
That might be a little bit of a controversial topic for us to talk about, and you and I. It's a fool's errand and they're never going to get it right. Others may spend a decade writing software to make a perfect system. Who knows?
You don't say. So another episode. Again, another episode, Paul. So they spent a surprising amount of ink with this new book saying, we are working to keep the same challenge ratings. And we have, what we've done is we've added powers to monsters so that they have multiple paths, multiple ways of achieving the listed challenge rating. But we've worked really hard to not change any of the documented challenge ratings.
Anecdotally, I heard that the reasoning for that is that they're worried that there are DMs out there who have kind of either memorized the CRs of a bunch of different monsters or just kind of know, oh, that's a CR1 versus that's a CR5 monster, and possibly written their own content. And they don't want those DMs to have to go back and retcon and change what's in their dungeon. Right? They want to be like, oh, you expect skeletons to be CR1, and you have an adventure that's four CR1 or level one characters, you should still be able to have skeletons in there.
Well, it's really interesting, but
here's how to adapt the stats so that they're still CR1.
Yeah. when we had the opportunity to interview Janelle J. Quays last year, right, and we talked about going back to her groundbreaking adventures, she said that's the main difficulty, right? So the main difficulty of revising one of those adventures is she just has to change all the monsters. All the monsters have to get swapped out for different monsters because the way that they interact with the characters and the challenge rating is all different. So if Wizards wants to maintain compatibility with fifth edition adventures, that actually is I can see why that's a major point. All of a sudden that becomes, I think the light bulb just went off for me, why that's important for them.
You know, now I really want to dig into, God forgive me, I really want to dig into a 5th edition printed campaign. I want to know more. How do they get run? How long do they take? Will they remain compatible with the new edition?
Yeah. I'm
very interested. I don't know a lot about this stuff. Maybe I just need to find somebody who does know a lot about this stuff and get them on the show, because I have questions and do I have the stomach to find out the hard way? Maybe. Maybe.
that's an interesting question. How long do those things last? That's a really good. I mean, it seems like they ought to have enough track record and experience that those things ought to be a known quantity at this point.
Yeah.
We don't pre-plan our campaigns in great detail like that, but someone must be succeeding at that. Interesting.
All right, Dan, we have just a couple minutes left here. Do you have any final thoughts on managing edition change?
Well, I have questions. This one I'm ending with open questions. And, I'm wondering how much emphasis should there be on making the PCs convertible? Is it important at all to make the changes diegetic, like actually observable in the campaign world, like we see in our comics, our history of comics and adventures in the first to second switch? And my main question is, will Wizards be successful at making the next version compatible with prior materials? I'm a little bit skeptical. I think that over 3 years of time, from when they announced it in 2021 to the release in 2024, that is 3 years. That's the entirety lifespan of original D&D or third edition. I think there'll be some kind of design motivation or marketing motivation that things will fall out of sync. I'm going to be very, very surprised if they succeed at that. But based on what you told me today, they put down more groundwork already than I would have expected. So maybe I'll be wrong about that.
I would point out they have a whole new challenge, I think, that other editions haven't faced, especially given the pandemic, which is to say a lot of this content exists in some automated digital form, right? Whether you're talking about people's Roll20 campaigns or people on Fantasy Grounds, how hard is going to be to take that prepackaged material that a lot of people have paid money for to exist in this digital space and convert to the new edition? The more they can do to make that easily convertible or just reusable, I think the better. So that content can still be resold. I don't know. Then again, maybe I'm full of shit, because maybe that just opens the market for, here's the new 6th edition version of my whatever campaign. You should buy that too. I don't know.
And, 5th edition has been has seen the rise of online streaming. So now there's an enormous quantity of content on YouTube And Williams pointing out to Critical Role, of course, of those are great marketing promotional avenues. Do they want to break compatibility so those things become incoherent? Probably not.
I mean, I don't remember the exact history here, but I do know for a fact that Critical Role, at least before it was a show, when it was just a private game, was fourth edition.
Interesting.
Were the very early episodes streamed at fourth edition, and did they convert to fifth, or did they just happen to coincide right with fifth? I don't know. I'd have to look that one up. And if they streamed it, now I super want to go find that. I want to go find the episode where they convert from fourth to fifth. If that exists. Maybe it doesn't.
Fascinating.
Curious. If you know, viewers, if that exists, shoot me a link. Post a link down there in the comments. I want to see it. If you have other thoughts on edition change and how to manage your campaign switching from one edition to the next, whether that's going from zero to first or first to second or fifth to whatever is coming next, leave us some comments. Leave us your thoughts. We would love to hear it. If you have any answers to any of Dan's questions that he just posed, let us know. Maybe that will continue the conversation. Maybe we'll have to have a follow-up show as we continue to grapple with this problem. Certainly, there's plenty of time for it between now and 2024.
I want to see some predictions in the YouTube comments. Yeah. I want people going on record so we can look back in 2 years from now and see who called it right and who called it wrong as far as how successful.
Let's focus
on praising. Let's find the people who are right and praise them and bring them on the show for what happens 2 years after that. I'm trying to be positive here, Paul. Come on.
Excellent.
If you are new to the show, of course, you can like, follow, and subscribe to us, The Wandering DMs, and we are on YouTube and Twitch and Twitter and Facebook and also GitHub, and we have the handle Wandering DMs on all the sites. So look for this there, and you'll get updates on upcoming shows.
If you prefer to listen to us as audio-only podcast, perhaps while you're driving on your commute or out snow blowing all the snow, you can do so. You can get audio-only podcast versions of our show on our website at wanderingdms.com or through various podcast carriers such as Google Podcast, iTunes, Spotify. If you are listening to the show right now on one of those carriers, maybe when you're done snowblowing, go inside and leave us a review on that site. That helps other users of that site find our show, and we really appreciate it.
We really do. Big thanks to the viewers today for a really interesting chat that's been going on during the live show. And of course, a big special thanks to our patrons who support the show every month. If you would like to join them, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. We have a couple different tiers. We have discounts on merch, access to our private Discord server, monthly behind-the-scenes videos, polls, and surveys that we do, and after-party chat that we have every Sunday. We'll be there in about 10 minutes to continue the discussion on our Discord server. Okay, so I think, Paul, that you are starting the new TDR tomorrow night, I think, right?
Gosh, I sure hope so. We keep trying to get this thing get this thing running. We do need the full cast present, and so unfortunately, illness has kept us from starting it because we want all of us there for the show kickoff. So hopefully, crossing our fingers that everyone is well and ready to stream tomorrow and will be online. If you're not sure, do watch our socials where we announce the shows.
I really hope that there's a lot less sickness going forward for everybody. Many of our gaming groups have been hit by that recently, and many things that we're trying to do. So I really, really hope in 2022 we will finally get a cure disease spell. Can someone please call a claret and get a cure disease in here? Because we're all kind of sick of it. All right. So don't forget, of course, we are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So we hope that you will join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.